whole lot of talk. The interviews that rock. Brought to you by Rock Antenna, Germany's number one rock radio station.
Sie haben ein neues Album am Start und zumindest einem Drittel hat er wortwörtlich seine Finger, aber sowas von mittendrin im Spiel. Hier ist der Mann für die Supermassive Basslines von Muse, Chris Wolfnorm. Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how you doing?
I'm great. Lovely meeting you. You've got your 10th record, the 10th album in the making, about to be released. The Wow Signal. It refers to a signal that has been recorded in 1977 as maybe till today as the most promising sign of alien life. How did this become the background idea for this album? Because you hear the new record, the songs you already release, it's intergalactic.
I think mostly it's almost a kind of metaphor, really, for searching for some kind of higher power, you know. And I think, you know, for as long as humans have been around, particularly in times where, you know, we go through things or go through difficult periods of life, you know, we have this kind of built-in need to find meaning in all of it. And usually the way that we do that is to kind of search for something higher or more important or more powerful than us that gives us meaning to our own existence, you know. I think for some people that could be religion, for some people it's aliens, for some people it's football, you know. it's just a very kind of natural human thing to do, you know. It's a natural human response, particularly in difficult times. So I think mostly that's what it was about, was, you know, a metaphor for going through tough times, going through a difficult personal period and trying to kind of find some kind of higher power to make sense of it all, you know.
Celebrating the first single of your new record, as you said, you know, something higher, you went literally higher and you brought a special tablet up into space, like 33 kilometers up there. How did you come up with that idea? And were you, the three of you, sitting on a sofa somewhere and watching this happening live and thinking, wow, like people at NASA?
Do you know, I can't remember how it came about, to be honest, but I know that when the opportunity presented itself, we were like, yes, definitely. Because I can remember when Tim Peake, the astronaut, this is probably going back maybe 10 years or so now, he was playing Supermassive Black Hole to wake up to, I think, in space. And I can remember at that time being so unbelievably excited about the fact that our music was being played in space. It just seemed so, I don't know, it just seemed so amazing to me at the time, you know. It was just like, wow, you know, our music's being played in space. So when this opportunity came up for that to happen, we were like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it just seemed so fitting with the theme of the album. And, you know, not just the theme of the album, but the, you know, I think historically there has always been this kind of link with us with kind of spacey themes, you know, not just lyrically, but also in the music, you know, even some of the early influence, the early kind of synth influences and the arpeggio stuff that we've always done, it kind of has that real kind of spacey kind of feel to it, you know. So yeah, it just seemed like an appropriate thing for our band to do, basically.
I think especially for the singles Cryogen and Nightshift Superstar, it starts with that kind of spacey. But I also thought about, do you know in cinemas that THX sound thing? That's something like listening to this. Was that some kind of goal of yours, just to make the audience feel like sitting there and being pressed into the seat by that wall of sound you're projecting onto them?
Yeah, there's quite a lot of that on this album, where we've got a lot of kind of interludes between songs and, you know, sounds and kind of soundscapes that pull songs together. And I think for me, you know, I find that kind of thing quite interesting, because it kind of links the album together as a whole, rather than making an album a collection of songs that are all kind of put together, which I think more and more albums are starting to feel like, because, you know, there is such this, you know, heavy emphasis on kind of streaming and singles now, that the importance of an album, it has unfortunately kind of dropped off a little bit, which I find a bit of a shame personally, because, you know, obviously the most important thing is the song, but I always like the idea that, you know, an album can be a standalone piece of art as well, in that, you know, the songs kind of all belong together and they form part of this kind of bigger body of something. So yeah, that's something that we worked on quite a lot, with linking the songs together and creating, you know, recurring kind of sounds that you will not necessarily hear on your first listen of the album, but you will hear certain things that will pop up in one song, and it might be quite subtle and you might not notice it, but it's already happened somewhere else. You know, there's quite a lot of that going on. Yeah, and it just kind of, yeah, adds this kind of cohesive thing to the record as a whole, I think.
How's the process going on in the studio between the three of you, or how many people are actually involved in saying, you know, that goes on the record? This is one of these songs we're going to be playing in front of tens of thousands of people, and we are certain they're going to love it. They're going to go fucking crazy.
Do you know what? It's difficult because, you know, ultimately we never know. You know, we never know what's going to really resonate with the fans, and it's hard for us to be the judge of it. You know, it's hard for us to be the judge of what's going to go down well and what is going to, you know, really connect with people. So I guess ultimately it does come down to us to kind of try and decide what we think is going to work well. And sometimes we're right and sometimes we're wrong, and sometimes it's difficult to decide between ourselves, you know. So there is always this process where we have to, negotiate a little bit or kind of trust each other. You know, sometimes we do have different opinions on what works and what is a great Muse song. But I think the one thing that I've learned over the years is that, you know, we've kind of branched out into so many different things over the years and tried lots and lots of different types of music. There are almost like five or six different versions of Muse, you know, that can exist together. You know, we're never afraid to try something a little bit different. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And we will try something else, you know. But ultimately, you know, the decision process comes down to the three of us. And I think that if someone in the band was hugely uncomfortable with something, then I think the rest of the band would ultimately listen to that. But ultimately, if somebody in the band was so certain that something was amazing and this is going to work, then the other people that maybe don't feel that have to take that on board as well. It is difficult. It is difficult, you know, and the whole idea of singles and, you know, always picking that first song. You know, you record an album of 10, 11, 12 tracks and, right, well, we've got to pick the first single, you know. What's the first single? It's so important, the first single. And it's like, how do you pick a song that represents the album as a whole? It's just impossible. So ultimately, you know, you then sort of think, well, you have to think ahead and, you know, okay, what are the five singles going to be, or the four singles or whatever? But I think at the end of the day, you know, I think particularly when you've had a career as long as ours, I think it's dangerous to place too much importance on individual songs. Obviously, we want all of the songs to be as good as they can be. And we always strive to make the best music we can. But, you know, if something doesn't work, it doesn't work, and you try something new, and that's just the way it goes, you know.
I thought listening to it, Unraveling, that is one of those songs again where I thought, wow, this is fucking heavy. This is great. Mm. Is that something where I think, oh yeah, we did it again. We made something super heavy, and like, how do you do that? Recording something like that, that sound of wall, just as a three-piece band? Because you got a shitload of effects at your feet on tour, I guess.
Yeah, I think we've always been unafraid to make use of technology, you know. I think that recording technology and even the technology that's available to us to play live now is just so beyond what we had when we started. So I think from quite an early stage, we've always tried to kind of, you know, keep up with what's going on, what's available. So, you know, even things like amp modeling and stuff you can do in Pro Tools and, you know, all of these things that you can use to make yourself sound massive, you know, we're not afraid to use them. And, you know, I remember the days of, you know, the first gigs we ever did, it was like one amp, you know, one mic, that was it. You switched it on, it sounded like it sounded, and that was it. Whereas now you've got, you know, these One U rack mount things that basically replace absolutely every piece of gear that's ever existed, and the possibilities are endless. And you know, you can sound however you want to sound. So I think we've always taken advantage of that. But also I think a lot of it comes from the energy in our playing. You know, I do feel that, you know, sometimes heaviness is not just about how something sounds, it's about how it feels. And Dom, the way he drums is, you know, he's a powerful drummer, you know, and that kind of brings something out in me when I play. And that in turn will bring something out in Matt in the way that he plays. I do think sometimes you have to accept that it is not always about the sounds, it's about the attitude and the vibe. You know, that to me is still equally as important. And I think, you know, if you listen to some of our early stuff and particularly our early live performances, I mean, they probably don't sound as good as we do now, but they're still full of vibe and energy, you know, which was equally as important.
I guess, you know, it's sitting in the studio recording, it took some time, and you can take yourself some time, you know, maybe going through new ideas, new melodies, new bass lines, whatsoever. How's that? You're going on tour very soon. You know, you can take your time, you can re-record, but at some point you've got to be, okay, I got to be able to play this, to make this sound as good live. What's going on in your head during the preparation for that?
Yeah, it can be difficult at times. And yeah, with each album that you do, it's another collection of songs. But also you have to remember the old songs, because at any given time you might decide to play Showbiz or something, you know, some old song from the first album. And so, you know, over time, the catalogue of songs and information in your brain is constantly expanding whilst getting older and your brain not being as efficient as it was when you were younger. So it definitely becomes a little bit more stressful, I would say, because I think every time you go on tour, you go through this process, and you know, it starts off quite stressful. And then basically you get, you know, 2 or 3 weeks into the tour and you can do it in your sleep. And that's the point at where it feels really good, because, you know the songs, you feel comfortable, any sort of stage nerves or anything has settled down a little bit, and the show just feels like the most natural thing on earth. And I kind of love it when I get to that point. And then by the end of it, it's just so easy. It's just, you know, it's a well-oiled machine. But then you stop, and then you get into recording mode, or you just have a year off, and then the whole thing kind of resets and you have to start again. And that is probably my least favorite time, because I don't know. I mean, I keep telling myself that I stress unnecessarily about it because it's always okay. You know, it is always okay. But it is a bit strange. It's you know, going into rehearsals and, you know, learning these songs again. And like you say, in the studio, it is easy because you make a mistake and you drop in and we do it again, or you can edit stuff together, and there isn't any pressure in the studio to play perfectly all the time, whereas live there is. But I sort of see it as a healthy thing, really. I see it as, you know, it means you care. You know, you want to be the best that you can be. And, you know, I know from personal experience that I am genuinely horrified if I make a bad mistake on stage, and it plagues me for weeks. You know, I find it very, very difficult. And, you know, if I ever make a mistake in a song, you know, a bad one, I will never, ever forget it. And every time I play that song for the rest of my life, I will remember that part where I made that mistake and make sure it never happens again.
You know, those moments when you're on a random Tuesday morning, you're standing under the shower, and from out of nowhere, there comes this memory from 20 years ago, and you, oh, shit, I did that.
I remember there was one time, I think it was in Moscow in 2019, and we were playing in this huge stadium. It was about 60 or 70,000 people there, and we were playing Psycho, which I think was the second song. And we got to the point in the song, I think it was after the second chorus, where it kind of goes into it's like this descending bass part. It goes ding, 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 ding. But that happens several times in the song. And I thought it was a different part of the song. But what made it worse was that Matt made exactly the same mistake as me at exactly the same time. So something had obviously happened where we both thought we were at a different part of the song. And then Dom started playing something else. And me and Matt are looking at each other going, what the fuck is going on here? And Dom literally just looked at me and he was like, you've blown it. You've blown it. And the whole song just went to bits. Like it was like two songs in this massive gig. And I literally cannot play Psycho without thinking about it. I can't play it. Every time we play that song, we get to that bit, I have this mental note that goes, it's not that bit, you're on the second chorus every time, because I can't get past it. It bothered me literally for months. And yeah, like you said, random moments where I'll be having a cup of coffee in the morning and I'll think about Moscow in 2019 and how I made the worst mistake ever. So that's why I generally try not to make many mistakes, because I know it literally ruins my life.
I thought, and that's why we're never going to play this song on this upcoming tour. So,
yeah, that's why I have to spend a lot of time practicing Night Shift Superstar, because that is it's quite a challenging one.
I would like to bring it all together, just to wrap it up, maybe, Chris, because we talked about the wow signal and the higher power, and it could be anything. And we talked shortly about maybe getting older and whatsoever. So let's talk about football.
I'm always happy to talk about football.
You got the tattoo on your arm, obviously, and you're like really a tactic aficionado. I think you're not watching football in the pub to talk about random stuff whatsoever, but to watch it, I guess. And so I suppose the World Cup. What do you think about who's going to make it? What do you think about England? And what do you think about the German team, actually?
Do you know what? I have not watched a lot of international football over the last couple of years, because England losing the final in 21 and 24, the Euros, I went to both of them. And it kind of killed me, you know. It was really interesting, because I went to the final in Germany. I was sat with a load of German fans who obviously just had tickets to the final, and I got talking to a lot of these fans, and it was quite interesting, actually. I think it was the first time I'd ever seen so many German fans rooting for England, because everybody was like, England has to win something at some point. Like, this is your time. Come on, you've got to do it. And I genuinely saw so many disappointed German people after Spain won. And now, obviously, we've got a German manager as well. I think it would be quite ironic if England managed to win the World Cup with a German manager. I think that would be really funny. But I'm looking forward to it. I love football. I find the England games very stressful, but I think as a festival of football, and particularly watching some of the kind of smaller nations, there's always one or two kind of surprise teams coming through. Yeah, you had obviously Iceland in 2016, which I remember very, very well, because I was at that game as well. I think it was Wales also in that tournament did really well. I think they got to the semi-finals. You know, and even going back to, like, you know, the World Cup in 1990, when you had like Cameroon, you know, with a kind of surprise team back then. You know, so it's almost like that side of it is just, it's so exciting, you know, watching, you know, these smaller teams do really well. As for who's going to win it, I mean, I sort of feel like a South American team are going to win it. I think Germany would do well. I mean, Germany have had a ropey few years, haven't they? They've sort of had a few where they've gone out quite early and sort of underperformed, really, considering the quality of the squads. But again, like with England, we, you know, the last couple of Euros, we've gone quite far in the tournaments, but without playing exceptional football. I mean, Euro 2004, I mean, I don't know how we got to that final. I mean, I thought we were poor pretty much the whole tournament. So you just never know what's going to happen. I mean, I really hope England do well. I really do. But I would have taken Phil Foden. I would have taken Trent, and I probably would have taken Cole Palmer. I think they are three huge, huge names to leave out. But My sons are Chelsea fans. I've got three sons who are all Chelsea fans, and they all have faith in Tommy Tuchel, because obviously he won the Champions League for Chelsea. So they are all saying, you know, Tommy's the man. He's going to do it. He's going to bring it home.
Fingers crossed. I saw, you know, a couple of years ago when Twitter used to be called Twitter, Muse invited some fans over at gigs beforehand to play some footballs, you play some games. Are you still doing that? Or did you came out of retirement, football retirement, last year for a charity game. But doing that kind of fan encounters on the pitch?
I didn't play football for 8 years. So between 2018 and last year, I did not play at all. So unfortunately, I have a hip issue, and I had quite a lot of surgeries on it, and I got to the point where I actually had to have a partial hip replacement. So I had that done 4 years ago, and there is still a slight complication with it. So I've had injections in it, which kind of settles it down a bit, and I have started playing again. But the problem is like 8 years is a long time between, 38 and 46. So, and because of this hip issue, I haven't got much power in my kicking foot anymore, and I can't sprint. I can only really jog. I can't sprint around. And it's not because I'm unfit, because I actually cycle loads. I do loads of fitness stuff, but I just can't sprint anymore. It just hurts. So I need to have another surgery at some point. And when I've had this other surgery, apparently it will be okay. But I had so many surgeries over a short period of time that I'm like, I just don't want any more surgeries. It's like 6 weeks in bed and 6 month recovery period. And like when we did the drones tour, I'd had a hip surgery literally 2 months before that tour started. And the first two months of that tour, I wasn't really fully recovered. But being on stage and sitting in planes and cars and all of that stuff. So I'm reluctant to play too much these days. I'll play a little bit just to get my football fix, but I am kind of worried about getting injured. And obviously that is not ideal in the middle of a tour. And I spent the best part of 10 years being very, very uncomfortable. So I'm kind of at a point now where it's relatively settled down and it's okay. So I probably won't be playing much football on tour. That's a very long answer to your question, but that is what I've had a lot of people have asked me why I don't do those games anymore, and that's why basically.
I hope it'll get better, because once you're back in Hamburg at some point, we're going to make everything possible to maybe get you guys playing in the Millantor Stadium from Etzsarasi, and fuck up their grass whatsoever.
That sounds great. I'll just hang around up front and score some goals and do very little running.
That's great. That's what I do. I just recently saw Jack Wildlife, by the way, who, of course, with Seven Nation Army, did like one of the football chants and anthems. Everybody's going crazy, you know? Is there the ambition with Muse? Would you love one of your songs to be like one of those chants where everybody in a stadium, 50,000 people in front of a football match, loses their minds and just screams one of your melodies?
I don't know. Do you know what? I always had this weird feeling, because they used, I think it was for the Euro 2008 qualifiers on Sky Sports in the UK. They used Starlight for that, and we didn't qualify. And I always saw it as a jinx that we jinxed England's chances of qualifying. So I've always kind of felt weird about us having any sort of song associated with football. It might be some sort of bad luck thing because of that. But I guess it would be quite cool. I mean, like, Seven Nation Army, I mean, it is pretty much played everywhere, isn't it? I mean, it's even when I go to watch Rotherham play, they're now in League Two. I mean, they play that there. It's just like a classic kind of football song. And you kind of would have never thought it when it came out, but I guess it is a cool thing to be associated. The other one's the Fratellis as well, isn't it? That one gets played quite a lot. Yeah, when people score goals, they play that as well. So yeah, it would be pretty cool.
We're going to try everything here at Rock Antenna to make that possible. And we're going to look out with our audience which song might be the best. I think that's a cool thing to look. We've got a week's time for the World Cup to figure out which is going to be the next chant.
Yeah, definitely.
I love the new record.
What
I heard so far is really great. What you're doing on bass is... to me, I used to play bass as well, and it's totally crazy. To me, it's really cool. Love it. Have fun going on tour. And do you know when you're coming to Germany already? Something is getting...
Hopefully in the autumn. I think the idea is sort of November and December will be Europe stuff. So hopefully it'll be around that time. I mean, we're still sort of in that period where we're basically trying to plan out and map out the next 3 years of, where we're going to go at what times. But I'm pretty sure Europe will be November, December.
Make sure to make a proper schedule so you get to São Paulo or whatever. We can make something happen in there if you want to see a proper match in an English stadium in Germany.
Sounds great.
Thank you so very much. It was lovely meeting you. And
thanks very much.
I'm looking forward to seeing you guys on stage. Bye bye.
Yes. See you later. Bye.
Whole lot of talk. The interviews that rock. Subscribe to our channel for more rocking podcasts.